This is Encounter on VOA. Here's Carol Castillo.
Welcome to Encounter on the Voice of America. On this edition of the program, the politics of tax reform. Hello again, I'm Carol Castillo. The Republican-led Congress is engaged in a last-ditch effort to overhaul the tax code, given their lack of legislative achievements, including a failure to repeal and replace the Affordable Care Act, also known as Obamacare. Republicans are under severe political pressure to pass a bill before the end of 2017. But the bill is facing heavy criticism for including a number of controversial provisions to offset the tax cuts, including a repeal of Obamacare's individual mandate, which requires every American to have health insurance or pay a fine. The proposed elimination of several deductions, especially those in high-cost states along the coasts like New York and New Jersey, is being met with considerable opposition from both Democrats and Republican lawmakers in those states. And a conservative Republican Senator Ron Johnson from the state of Wisconsin declared this week that he is opposed to both Senate and House versions of the bill because he felt they benefited corporations at the expense of smaller companies. In addition to the looming deadline and policy challenges facing consensus on tax legislation, politics are roiling the Republican Party, further complicating the task. Alabama Republican Senate nominee Roy Moore, whose vote could be crucial in passing tax reform, has been accused of sexual misconduct. A number of women have told the Washington Post newspaper that Moore pursued unwanted romantic or sexual relationships with them when they were teenagers and he was in his 30s. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell and several other senior Republican lawmakers have said that the 70-year-old Moore should drop out of the December 12th election. But Moore has been defiant in refusing to quit the race. Meantime, Democratic challenger Doug Jones is rising in the polls. We'll check in on the status of the investigation into Russia's interference in the U.S. presidential election and potential ties between Moscow and Trump campaign officials. And we'll discuss whether Democratic victories in gubernatorial elections in Virginia and New Jersey augur a trend for Democrats in the all-important 2018 congressional elections. Joining us to discuss these and other issues dominating the U.S. political landscape are our veteran analysts. John Fortier is director of the Democracy Project at the Bipartisan Policy Center, a think tank here in Washington, and Jim Kessler, senior vice president for policy at Third Way, a centrist policy group also based in Washington. And both gentlemen join me here at the VOA Broadcast Center in Washington. Gentlemen, welcome back to the program.
Thanks, Carol.
Thank you.
Well, John Fortier, let me begin with you. Let's talk about this tax overhaul. Republicans think that this is the end-all and be-all. They have to get this done in order for them to face the voters back home for the Christmas recess, in order to keep donors contributing to their reelection efforts. Talk about the politics and the policy problems bedeviling the overhaul of the tax code.
Well, certainly one of President Trump's, but also congressional Republicans' big priorities was tax reform. And I would say even more broadly, there was some consensus across the political spectrum that we should do something about our corporate tax system, which we tax at a higher rate than many countries and in a different way. That consensus probably isn't with us anymore in terms of the actual bill. The Democrats are against what Republicans are proposing, but that's what's behind this. Where they are now is in the middle of the sausage-making process. The House of Representatives has a plan. The Senate is discussing one. The big point is the Republicans are proposing a large tax cut, about $1.5 trillion over 10 years. They are proposing some simplification, reducing some of the deductions that you take for income and trying to make it so that many people don't have to file more complicated taxes. And, of course, this big reduction in the corporate tax rate. They do believe, I mean, there are politics in there, but they strongly believe that this is a growth measure that will be helpful to the country as a whole, also maybe helpful to them politically. And there are some difficulties putting it together. I think it is important for them to do this, given their failures in health care. But we're right in the middle of this process where there's a lot of back and forth here. And it is a narrow course in the Senate where they only could lose 3 votes. And if they don't satisfy a number of people, they're not going to get it done. But I would say this is actually moving along a little faster than maybe I'd thought. They had talked about getting it done by the end of the year. I thought that was an ambitious time frame. They're shooting for that now, but we don't know the outcome. We don't know whether it will get done or not. And obviously, Democrats have essentially unified against it, and Republicans are depending on only their own votes to get it done.
Well, Jim Kessler, Democrats are unified against it, but we are seeing now some defections on the Republican side because the cost of these tax cuts is probably, or it appears to be, too high for even some Republicans. As I said in the introduction, repealing the individual mandate of the Obamacare to pay for the tax cuts is bothering even some Republicans. There are these so-called state and local deductions that would be eliminated if one form of the bill is approved. This, of course, is met with great opposition by particularly so-called blue states, Democratic states, both Republicans and Democrats. There are a lot of problems with this bill. How do you see the objections, particularly on the Democratic side?
I don't think this bill is going to pass. I've had conversations this week with three separate Democratic senators and then a series of lobbyists whose business is lobbying on the tax bill and trying to pass it. And I asked them all the same question. I said, do you think this thing is going to pass? And all of them said to me, I'm not so sure it can get the votes. There are a series of problems with this bill. Number one, it increases the deficit by $1.5 trillion over 10 years. Republicans used to be the party of fiscal responsibility. This is going to be a problem for some Republican senators, John McCain, Jeff Flake, Bob Corker. They can't afford that many defections. As you noted about the state and local taxes and how it affects certain states differently, I've never seen a tax bill written that seemed so beneficial to some regions and so harmful to other regions. This is unique. So the problem is some of these regions, they're mostly blue, meaning they've got Democratic senators and House members, but there's a smattering of red there. So you mentioned Ron Johnson of Wisconsin, who has defected from the bill, and he talked about corporations are doing well compared to small business. No, that's not the reason. The reason he defected is Wisconsin is one of those states that have high state and local taxes, and it is a state that would be a big loser in this. You add a couple other things. The president is very, very weak right now. Very few people are afraid of him. They've got a deadline where they've got an Alabama special election Senate race that if it turns badly for Republicans, and it looks like it may, they've just lost a vote. So there's a lot of problems here. It's a Rubik's Cube, and I don't think they're going to be able to figure it out by the deadline.
Well, back to you, John Fortier. Let's talk about the politics for the Republicans, which would affect potentially this tax bill, and that is this Roy Moore, the Republican who has now been accused of sexual misconduct by many women. He is, of course, denying these allegations, but many senior Republican lawmakers have abandoned him, have told him that he needs to quit the race, and if he does go through with it and potentially wins, they may even press ethics charges and they may try to expel him from the Senate. So it doesn't look good. Talk about the politics and this particular problem.
Well, it's hard to imagine more of a soap opera story than this one, and Republicans are likely not to see a good end to this. So this seat, this election has come about because Jeff Sessions, who is now the Attorney General of the United States, was a senator from Alabama. He, in leaving his seat, left a vacancy. Our system is you appoint a temporary person, and then you have an election. So we're having a special election. Now, the establishment candidate, or the one who, quite conservative, but establishment candidate, Luther Strange, is the current senator appointed to this, was supported by Donald Trump, but not supported by people in his populist wing, Steve Bannon in particular. His own advisor in the White House, now outside the White House, is riling up the party in many areas where he's recruiting more populist candidates to run against establishment candidates. So this candidate, Roy Moore, won. He beat the establishment candidate. He's now the Republican nominee. There's an election in December. And he had been a controversial figure anyway. He was a very conservative Christian judge who was taken off the bench in the state courts because he refused to take the Ten Commandments down. And then a second time got in trouble because he refused to enforce gay marriage laws. And so he was already a very, very controversial figure. And now as the election is approaching, these allegations have come out that not only he's had misconduct with women, but women sometimes at the age of 14 years old, and there's been a flood of stories and accusations made against him. This doesn't look very good. It's still a very conservative state. Perhaps Roy Moore could win that seat. If he does, Republicans, I think, will be very embarrassed by it. If he loses, they will lose a seat. There's some talk about what they might do about it. There are some possible options, but I think they're all very unlikely unless Roy Moore steps aside himself. Roy Moore is being pressured by most establishment Republicans. Most senators have come out and said, we don't support you anymore. We think you should get off the ballot, leave, and perhaps they could put another person in with a right-hand candidate. That would probably be the best scenario for Republicans where they might hold the seat. But if he digs his heels in and holds on, possibilities are that he either loses the seat, Republicans don't have the seat, or he wins and Republicans are talking about trying to expel him afterwards or disown him in many ways. So it really is a mess for Republicans with a good chance that they will lose a seat in their relatively slim majority in the Senate.
It's a mess for Republicans, Jim Kessler. And of course, Roy Moore is quick to add that he thinks the Democrats are actually trying to discredit him with these allegations and even establishment Republicans. But the evidence suggests the contrary. Nonetheless, what are the implications for Democrats of this unfortunate mess? And do you think that the Democratic challenger, Doug Jones, who we see is up in the polls in Alabama, in a state where Democrats really do not have much of a chance, never had in the last quarter century, do you think he may even have a chance?
Doug Jones has a real chance. The interesting thing about the United States is we have these elections for the Senate, which is a federal body, but each state sets its own rules for elections. So in Alabama, one of the rules is you can't remove somebody's name from the ballot within 75 days of election day. Well, the election is December 12th. So they're hamstrung there. And we've got a situation where Roy Moore is saying it's he said, she said, but it's really he said, she 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 said, and she said. It's one against eight. These women don't know each other. Most of them are Republicans. All of them came forth voluntarily. And then there's corroborating evidence. He can blame Democrats, but the truth of the matter is, you know, he's a predator. That's what he is. He cruised malls and would go after teenagers. The problem for Republicans is they're already facing a headwind because the president is deeply unpopular. We just saw in Virginia and New Jersey elections, Democrats not only won, but won with much bigger margins than people expected. And then you add on to this a tawdry sexual scandal. And this is reminiscent of about 10 years ago when Republicans were having problems. And then a sex scandal came up with a congressman named Mark Foley of Florida that seemed to not be handled correctly by leadership. Mitch McConnell, who's the Republican Senate leader, is trying to handle it correctly. I think he's doing a great job on this, to be honest. Hats off to Republican leader Mitch McConnell trying to deal with the Roy Moore problem. But, you know, this is just another thing that says this Republican Party seems to be careening out of control.
You're listening to Encounter on the Voice of America. We're discussing the U.S. political landscape with our special guests, John Fortier, director of the Democracy Project at the Bipartisan Policy Center, and Jim Kessler, from whom you just heard, senior vice president for policy at Third Way. And this is a reminder that our Encounter podcast is available for free download on iTunes. You can find the download by clicking on the iTunes tab on our website at voanews.com/encounter. You may also follow me on Twitter at Carol Castiel VOA or connect with us on Facebook. Here's a shout out to George Agbazi from Jos, Nigeria. If you want to hear your name on the air, please send an email to encounter@voanews.com or like us and leave a comment on our Facebook page. Well, back to our guests talking about U.S. politics. Let's now turn a bit to foreign policy. John Fortier, President Trump coming off a long trip to Asia and the Pacific. He made a televised speech to the American public, to the world last week, touting success on this trip, saying that we are moving very strongly against preventing North Korea from acquiring and using nuclear weapons, touting friendships with leaders around the region. And yet, critics say, well, it may not be so rosy, that in fact the United States has actually placed itself outside what some say is the best available framework, for example, for trade in the region, the Trans-Pacific Partnership. That was Obama's signature trade deal, which Mr. Trump has repudiated, saying that he's going to do better deals, bilateral deals. So how do you see the upshot of the trip?
Well, I think you see a lot of what Donald Trump talked about on the campaign trail and is talking about now, I think, with some more, a little more sophistication about foreign policy than he had before. Look, he's making the argument that America shouldn't be involved in so many multilateral organizations or treaties, that he himself, I think, can establish relationships one-on-one around the world, that he's going to fight for America in trade deals one-on-one, but isn't going to be bound by some of these trade deals that Obama had written or just that were bad for America. You know, we'll see. We don't have any evidence of what's going to happen on this. To be fair to Trump, I think Hillary Clinton also, the Democratic Party, started to move against this trade deal. The election pushed both sides to be a little more skeptical of trade. But certainly many critics are going to say that Donald Trump is losing our leverage in the world, losing our leverage to the Chinese, who are more engaged in this trade deal and also with other parts of the region. But he's going to push back and say these relationships are going to matter, and they're going to matter on North Korea, and they're going to matter on one-on-one trade deals. And if we want to, you know, we want to judge, we have to wait a little bit down the road. But I think that's the debate set up between a very unestablishment president who believes in these things and a more establishment Democratic Party, but even a lot of the Republican foreign policy establishment, I think, skeptical of what the president's doing.
Jim Kessler, no one would argue against the fact that relationships are important in establishing our foreign policy, in having leverage. On the other hand, some critics are saying of Mr. Trump that he's too susceptible to flattery by strong men such as Xi Jinping of China, Vladimir Putin of Russia, autocrats. How do you see the trip and its results?
Yeah, I think Trump's ideology is applause and adoration as opposed to left-right sometimes. I thought there was one step forward and two steps backwards. The step forward, his speech to the Korean Assembly on North Korea was a high point for him. It was a very strong speech, and he deserves credit for giving it. There were two parts of the trip that were very negative. One was the Trans-Pacific Partnership. It moved on without the United States. Carol, you've had me on this show to talk about TPP in the past. I'm a big booster of it. I think it's really about whether America and like allies are going to set the rules for trade in Asia, or whether China ultimately is going to set the rules. It moved forward without the United States. That's a vacuum that's going to be filled. My belief is that China is going to do that. The other demerit on the trip was his conversation with Putin and his saying to Putin, supposedly asking him whether they meddled in the U.S. election, as if you're ever going to get an honest answer from the former KGB agent who can play chess while Trump is barely able to play checkers. And then saying he basically believes Putin, and this is happening at the exact moment where the leaders of Spain and Britain are saying there's evidence that the Russians interfered in their election. So baffling, self-inflicted wounds there for the president.
Well, speaking of the Russian probe, John Fortier, let's move on to that. We have seen in the past weeks indictments by the special counsel, Robert Mueller, looking into Russia's interference in our elections and potential ties between Trump and Russia. We saw indictments against Paul Manafort, former Trump campaign manager and lobbyist. He was charged with conspiring to launder money, conspiracy against the United States, and failing to register as a foreign agent. We saw a former advisor to the Trump campaign, George Papadopoulos, who pleaded guilty to lying to federal agents about his contacts with Kremlin-connected Russians. So this probe, notwithstanding denials by Vladimir Putin, which we really have to take with a grain of salt, this is moving forward. How is this going to bedevil Mr. Trump's, the Trump administration's desire to move forward on policy, domestic and foreign?
Well, it's an ongoing investigation, and so we've seen some developments, but we don't know what the end story is going to be. And so while it's ongoing, it's never good for a president, and this president has expressed his displeasure with it, and it's hurting him, no doubt about that. I mean, I think what you've seen is what we knew and much more evidence of it. Certainly Russia tried to play in our elections and did so in a variety of ways. And certainly there were people in the Trump orbit who had very shady business connections with Russians or with Russian allies, and especially Paul Manafort. And we see even a hint with a very low-level aide of someone trying to perhaps see if they could use the Russians to dig up some dirt that would help Donald Trump. What we don't know and what we haven't seen is there more to come? Is there a collusion, or that's a loose term people are using, but a real connection between the Donald Trump campaign working hand in glove with the Russians to win the election and the Russians having that sort of influence? That sort of direct influence would be a very, very damaging thing for the president, probably nearly fatal. But will we see more of what we've seen? Certainly not good for the president. Certainly evidence of Russian meddling and bad influence, but not the kind of direct connection that some are pointing to. So not a good thing, but the investigation will yield more and we'll see where it goes.
Well, Jim Kessler, for your take on the Russia probe, despite the fact that Mr. Trump calls this probe a so-called witch hunt by Democrats, this flies in the face of all hard evidence by the intelligence community. Even social media executives have admitted that Russia interfered in the election using their very social media platforms to spread lies as a platform for bogus ads and fake accounts. And they are also looking into how to rectify that. So this is something that Americans take seriously and don't see it in a partisan way. It should not be seen in a partisan way because, as I said, we have evidence, bipartisan evidence that shows, and we know Republicans are also very seriously concerned. Again, where do you think this is going, and how does this hurt the Trump administration in terms of working on real policy initiatives?
The Mueller investigation entered a new phase several weeks ago. Mueller brought down two big birds, Manafort and Gates, and he got a canary to sing.
That was
Papadopoulos. And so for 3 months, this guy's been probably wearing a wire. You know, there's still some people in America that think that this is a partisan effort. That number is dwindling. And look, ultimately, this is another thing that is making the president incredibly weak. We have a scandal-ridden president. The Mueller investigation looks very, very aggressive. The latest thing that we saw is Donald Trump Jr. and Julian Assange, you know, or WikiLeaks going back and forth during the campaign. Like, this is pretty serious.
As we close, maybe on a positive note for some and a negative for others, John Fortier, Democrats, big wins in Virginia and New Jersey.
Elections at the midterms or like the midterms in Virginia between the two elections usually go against the president's party. If the president is not doing well, they go more against the president's party. That big landscape was very hurtful to Republicans. So Ed Gillespie, a candidate for governor on the Republican side, who in many ways was a very strong candidate, an establishment candidate who had done well in an election for Senate 3 years before, was blown out in Virginia. And I think there are some pluses and minuses in the Trump coalition, but the one part of the state, a very rural part of the state, moved in the Trump direction. But the overwhelming story is that really in Northern Virginia, places that have lots of educated people, educated Democrats, even some educated Republicans, that turnout came out very, very strongly against the president. And to the extent you see this, which I think if the president is where he is now in the polls in a year or so when we have midterm elections, it's very bad news for Republicans, especially in states that have that look of upscale, educated voters. But more broadly, the president is at a low number and should expect, you know, significant losses in the House of Representatives. This is a harbinger of that.
And of course, the last word to you, Jim Kessler, on those victories for the Democrats in New Jersey and Virginia, to what extent they augur well for Democrats coming into the congressional elections. How do you read those victories?
Well, your listeners can't tell that I'm smiling right now. You know, great wins for Democrats. My expectation is that 2018 is going to be a bloodbath for Republicans in the midterm. This is not just wishful thinking on my part. This is, you know, what I feel by the analysis that I've had. Here's the most significant thing I feel about the Virginia race. If you look at the electorate, among those who identified as liberals and conservatives, those voters who identified as liberals and conservatives, you put them together, the Republican Ed Gillespie actually beat Ralph Northam, the Democrat Ralph Northam. So when it was base versus base, the Republican actually got the edge there. But those who identified as moderates went to Northam by a margin of 64% to 33% and by more than 300,000 votes. If Republicans are not able to win the middle of the electorate, the ideological middle, in the upcoming 2018 midterm elections, they're going to lose dozens and dozens of House seats, and they may lose the Senate as well. So not good news for Republicans, very good news for Democrats.
All right. Well, on that high note, at least for the Democrats, I'm afraid that is all the time we have on this edition of Encounter. I'd like to thank my guests, John Fortier, he's director of the Democracy Project at the Bipartisan Policy Center, and Jim Kessler, senior vice president for policy at Third Way. Gentlemen, as always, thanks so much for coming in and sharing your insights.
Thank you.
My pleasure.
Encounter was produced in Washington. Thanks to Rebecca Ward for booking our guests. Our engineer was Joe Gill. I'm Carol Castiel. Join me again next week for another Encounter on The Voice of America.